The Truth News Network. In a world where politics are so complex, so convoluted, you can't tell the players without a scorecard, here's the question of the age. Is it more worrisome that Joe Biden has caches of confidential documents locked up in his garage, or that he has access to the keys to a Corvette? These and other questions answered by your Doctor of Truth, Dan Newman.
Mr. Dan.
Mr. Baker, how are you today, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Have you been listening this morning?
I have. I have heard the entire show today, which is kind of rare for me, but I was sitting here in my hotel room and turned off the news on the boob tube and turned into Dan Newman.
Well, you're better off now because you did. If you didn't learn anything in the first hour of the show, you learned how I feel about it all.
Well, and I learned how your listeners feel about ZZ Top. So that, that was a little disappointing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're a great musician. We come from the same era. I'm a keyboard guy, and we both played in bands. I did. You still do. ZZ Top. I don't want to go off on ZZ Top, but, you know, for four guys, they were epic in their years. You got to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah, you better not go off on those guys right now.
No. Anyway, we got a lot of things going on the national level. Do you have any thoughts of your own about the expected State of the Union address tonight?
Well, look, Dan, we're talking about Biden, right? So they're gonna pump him up with enough B12 shots and whatever memory drugs they have from Pfizer and Moderna. they're gonna roll him out there on the stage. He'll have just enough time before the effects of those chemicals wear off to get him through this speech. It'll probably be well delivered because they'll have him completely prepped, and they'll have him, as I said, chemically enhanced. But, you know, there's nothing going to come from this that we don't already know from this man, this administration, and whoever his puppet masters are. We know what the agenda is. It's pretty well set in stone at this point. Everything is gearing towards two primary things, and both of them scare me to death. We are looking at a worldwide economy based upon the fiction of this man-induced climate change. And then we are also looking at the subsequent part of that economy being the centralization, globalization, and digitalization of our currencies so that they can literally control what we do, where we go, and who we can talk to. I mean, I'm sitting here in D.C. right now and just amazed that I can still navigate, considering what I'm working on, and do so with, you know, with my bank cards, my credit cards, and paying for hotels and Ubers and meals and stuff like that. Because as soon as they digitize this, Dan, they just will cut that off and I won't be able to do what I'm doing. You think they're going to let me investigate them when they have control of my bank account?
I got to be totally honest with you. I can't believe that you're not behind bars and that you haven't been behind bars for all that you were involved in on January 6th. You're one of those insurrectionists. You were there. They saw you. They captured you on video, videoing them. That makes you an evil guy. That means you've got to be a MAGA Republican.
You know, that's probably the only reason that I am actually not, I have not been arrested, haven't been prosecuted. As many of your listeners know, I have been interviewed by the FBI. And I have been threatened by a U.S. attorney. In fact, my attorney was told last Thanksgiving, not this past one, a year plus ago, 2021, that I would be charged within the week. And that was 14 months ago, and I still have not been charged. But I think part of the reason, there's probably five or six force fields that I have up around me right now, but one of those reasons is the fact that I probably was not in D.C. that day as a MAGA, you know, flag-waving Trump Republican. I'm not. I'm I'm not a member of any party. I'm a what you would call a small L constitutional libertarian political philosophy. And in my own FBI interview, I told, you know, told them very clearly that I would have had just as big a problem with what happened that day had it been a Democrat in the House or in the White House as it would have been a Republican. It didn't matter to me. I was there to cover the event as a journalist, and that's what I did. So I followed the story where the story went, and the story went inside that building. So I followed it in there.
Let's quickly segue to stuff. D.C. and you, stuff. There's some stuff brewing, and I don't know what of it you can talk to it us about or any of it, but can you share anything new?
Yeah, let me give you the Reader's Digest condensed version for a couple reasons, both to save time and to keep myself out as much trouble as possible. But since we were last on the show together, this has been probably the biggest week for me in terms of my personal investigations into all the things related to January 6th. And now we now know it's been over 2 years, Dan. It's hard to believe that. I mean, it seems like just a few weeks ago in my head, and it's probably because I live it daily, but it's been over 2 years. But just in the last week, I've had the interview with the FBI whistleblower, Steve Friend. And of course, you posted that on your website as well. Thank you. And that has gotten a lot of penetration into the right places. A lot of important people have heard it. That's part of the reason why I'm here today. And then last Thursday, I spent 4.5 hours with another Capitol Police officer who's currently employed by the Capitol Police. Obviously, he's got to remain as an anonymous, unnamed source. But this is an individual who has some incredible stories to tell about what happened that day that make no sense whatsoever and are completely outside of the boundaries and typical modus operandi or operational procedures of the Capitol Police. And he truly believes, he adamantly believes that they were set up that day to fail. I can't get into what, maybe we'll come back if we have time. I can talk a little bit about his testimony without giving away who he is.
Well, give us just a little bit so that I don't go over the edge, but tell us what you can.
Yeah, I just have to be careful to not get into any particular details that would easily identify him. But let me just say this. He happened to be part of a Capitol Police unit that was called in early that morning for unknown reasons, but that's not atypical. Their units can be called in for special events. There's going to be a big rally in town or a known protest or something to that effect. Well, when he arrived at 6:30 in the morning, and then they got their roll call briefing between 7 and 7:30, the captain who was giving the briefing told them that they would not be given a handout that day. Now, so your listeners understand, every single morning, without exception, when a Capitol Police officer goes in for his roll call or her roll call briefing that morning, whatever the briefing contains is then handed to every single officer on the line in written form, because it has the details of their assignments, where they've got to be, where they need to move, who they're going to be protecting. I mean, it's quite a lot of information. So rather than expecting them to remember it, they get a printout 100% of the time. That's the thing. That is the operational procedure of the Capitol Police. On this particular morning, they were told they would not be receiving a handout because what they were about to be told was too sensitive. So obviously their ears pick up. This has never happened before. So the captain gives the briefing, and when the briefing was over, they all look at each other like, what was that? There was nothing sensitive about it whatsoever. It sounded just to them like another day at the office. So they walk out of this briefing, scratching their heads, go about their morning routines. And then all of a sudden, between 10 and 11 a.m., they are called by their sergeant to come to their meeting place and gather up their bags of their hard equipment. Now, that's the, you know, that's like the RoboCop suits that you see, you know, the riot gear, basically. So they're told to gather up their bags and go get on the bus. And when they get on the bus, their sergeant tells them to put their bottoms on. That's the bottom half of their equipment, their hard gear. And then they take the bus and position it closer to the Capitol. And then they sit there for 2 hours. Now, understand, this is all happening between 10 and 11 a.m., but the first breach of the first outer barricade where Officer Carolyn Edwards was injured that morning at 10:52, and just coincidentally, within 2 minutes of that, two pipe bombs were discovered at RNC and DNC headquarters, respectively. Then all of a sudden, their radios go off, squawking that they have a breach at the Capitol, and they need the hard units out on the West Terrace. So they were already there. They were already positioned. They'd been sitting on a bus for 2 hours with no knowledge of what was going on. And then suddenly everything goes down, probably, Dan, as planned.
Well, they were prepared. They were sitting on the bus waiting for the word to go, and somebody above them had a plan, and they were just implementing what whoever above them had given them to do when it was called to happen. Let me ask you this, right, without revealing anything or getting you in trouble, do you believe that there is someone out there in the blogosphere, maybe somebody we know, maybe not, but there seems to me that all of this had to be coordinated and initiated, if it's not by one person, a small group of people, because there were too many things that came together that included too many people in too great a time, and with too many people out there, there has to be some type of coordination. Don't you agree?
Well, there has to be, but as you know, the larger the group of conspirators are, the more difficult it is to contain the secret. And that is one of the things that we're struggling against right now, is that there are aspects of this that if we want to go full tinfoil hat on this, and I'm not predisposed to doing that, but if we wanted to go full tinfoil hat on this, like maybe we'll do about the weather balloon in a minute. But the point being is that it could be contained in this particular operation to a rather small group of individuals, tightly contained enough to keep it a secret. And the problem is that this event, Dan, is the single most recorded event in the history of the world. So what transpired that day, it's going to be tough to keep under wraps eventually. When we talk about this 14,000 hours worth of unreleased video, let me tell you what I just came into possession of yesterday. This is 2 years later. I came into possession of a sealed video marked highly sensitive by the Department of Justice, showing three undercover Metro DC police. That's not the Capitol Police, that's the actual city cops. They're undercover. They're in the crowd on January 6th. They're chanting along with the crowd. And as the crowd is now surging from that West Terrace up and underneath those scaffolding steps, which led to the first breached open door on the northwest door of the Capitol, these three cops are actually encouraging the crowd to move to the Capitol. This is part of the reason why these videos have not been released.
Well, obviously.
But I've got it. Yeah. But I've got it now.
Okay, stop right there. Should you have just said that on this show?
I happened to look.
And our friends in Langley have joined us, so they're hearing this.
Yeah, well, those guys in Langley also know that I've signed the protective order, so I have a legal right to see it. I just can't share it. I can talk about it. I can tell you what I saw. I just can't show you the video.
Okay. So those cops, Metro cops, were integrated into the crowd. They're cheering the crowd, chanting, pointing them to go into the Capitol building.
Yes.
Okay. Your synopsis, your thoughts about that.
Well, I expect that, and again, not going full tinfoil hat, I expect that all of the major agencies and police forces had undercover operatives embedded in the crowd, because that's the right thing to do. If in fact they intelligence, and we know they did, that there was something going on that day, then they needed those types of resources in the crowd. But we also know that there were paid provocateurs, because Sergeant at Arms Michael Stinger, the late Michael Stinger, who was Sergeant at Arms at the Senate on January 6th, in his only congressional testimony in the 4 or 5 weeks after the event itself, he said that this is an opportunity for us to find out and investigate who those, and he said it, who those paid provocateurs were, and find out where this money came from, what they were paid to do, because he saw it just like others of us who are analyzing this thing in great detail. He saw it with his own eyes as well. He knew this wasn't just a crowd of disaffected MAGA voters or Antifa or whatever. There was something else going on that day that gave clear indication to professional eyes of a coordinated effort to whip this crowd into a frenzy, and then to direct that crowd with each movement that was made and each breach that was made that day. So, you know, that with that being said, more and more of that evidence is coming out. And all of that has led to the reason why I'm here right now, which is, believe it or not, Sunday, I was actually asked if I would be interested in a position working for the new House committee that has been given the charter to investigate the weaponization of these three-letter agencies against law-abiding citizens. Obviously, I'm incredibly interested in that. I'm not going to do it if it's just another puppet organization or a kangaroo court type of investigative situation like the original House Select Committee was, ran by Pelosi last year. But if it's the real thing and they're really interested in the truth, then I'm very interested.
I hope you have some body armor with you if you go down that road, because you would be somebody that they would want to not be doing those kind of things. You know, you're like a dog on a bone when it comes to this. You just won't let go of it, and you're going to keep after it until you figure it out.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out yet, but I told this individual who is introducing me to, and I say this in parentheses, the group today. In fact, Dan, it's kind of hilarious, and I don't mind saying this. I think that daylight is the greatest disinfectant, obviously. And so that's one of the reasons why I don't mind talking about some of these things. First of all, I think it actually protects me. The second thing is that if they do take me out, they create 1,000 other of me in the process. I will become the greatest conspiracy theory related to this thing that there would be if they try to take me out. And that'll just excite a lot of other people and put a lot of other rabid dogs on that bone. But, when I got the text yesterday telling me what time the appointment was and where we're to meet, basically the text said, and I have to leave out, he says, meet me at the corner of Blank Street and something something Avenue, and then I'll walk you over to meet the group. So that's the spy versus spy kind of fun that I'm having right now here.
But, well, I don't need to say this, but whatever you'll be able to say, if it's something that is that big and that important that you can share, call me back before next Tuesday and we'll go live with it. We'll put it out there. Here's what I think you need to think about while you're going down this road. The more light you shine on it, whatever it is, the more protection you have. And as you know, I have the personal cell phone numbers of a number of really good people in Congress that have some power. If you get in a jam, make sure you let me know.
Well, that group today will contain maybe some of those exact numbers.
It will. I already know that. I'm just saying. They know me and our relationship, and that may be part of the reason why you got the phone call. You've also got a reputation up there. Just want to say, they know you're there. Well, let's change our tinfoil hats as we got a few minutes left. I want to go into this China balloon debacle that's out there. I'm enjoying this.
Dan, don't take your tinfoil hat off for this. This is, you got to keep it on for this.
Well, I got a special one for this one. You know, I've got two different tinfoil hats. What is your opinion of what the heck is going on with this and the aftermath? I got to be honest with you. I popped popcorn and I sat to watch it because it's like a movie to me. I just can't believe this kind of crud happens, even in the Biden administration. Go.
I've got Fox TV on right now. Of course, I've got the just on the screen here in my hotel room, and the sound is turned down, and they're still going over it. I mean, I'm watching. I see the missile strike yet again. Now I'm seeing the boat, the fishing trawler that's recovering the balloon canvassing, and so it has captured everyone's imagination. And obviously, when I first became aware of it, I got a call. Well, actually, I got a message from my daughter, and she said, "Dad, are you paying attention?" And at the time, I wasn't. So I turned on the news and got caught up real quick on what was happening. And so I started making inquiries among the few knowledgeable type of sources that I respect and trust. And they had no more answers than what we're hearing debated or conjectured on television. And of course, all of those range from the wildest of conspiracy theories to just the basic same old political accusations. The two parties throw out at each other. You've got one side blaming Biden for endangering America by not shooting that thing down when it first crossed into our territorial airspace in Alaska. And then you've got the other side now going, Trump allowed three of them to cross our continent during his presidency. So, I mean, that kind of stuff I dismiss right out of hand. But let me just say this before I kind of give you my idea about what's going on here. You remember Y2K? We've got to go back to our conspiracy theories and our tinfoil hat. All right, you remember Y2K?
Sure. At that time I had my company and we had computer networks and we were connected and worked every day for hospitals around the nation. So we had access to their computer systems. And of course they had access to ours. And my IT director, he spent the night at our facility to watch it, to just make sure nothing happened. And of course, if it did happen, what would we do? We didn't have any idea.
Right. Well, if you listened to a certain group of people, and I was listening to them, a lot of people that I really respected before Y2K, and they were telling us that the planes were going to drop out of the sky, satellites were going to crash to Earth because these chips would not be able to handle the date change, that they were not prepped, not programmed to handle the date change. That's the basic theory. And then, of course, your company's computers were going to crash or they would no longer be able to speak with the hospital's computers. That was the whole theory. So one thing that gave credence to this notion that all of these computer chips were going to fail and then all of the related components that run our lives and that we're tapped into every day were going to fail was because big companies, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, American Express, I think that their own remediation budget was something like $5 billion.
Yeah, it was incredible amount.
So these big multinational companies and banking companies were spending millions of dollars to make sure that they didn't have this alleged or proposed or conspiratorial problem with computers and with chips on the big date change on midnight of December 31st, 1999. And so what ended up happening is I was doing a speaking engagement up in Boston, and this was in the summer of 1999. I graduated from high school right there at Parkway High School in Bossier City with a young lady who was one of my best friends there in high school. And she actually was a brilliant, brilliant, math nerd. There's just no other way to say it. She ended up going to college as a math major, obviously at a high level, ended up working for NASA. I think she got her first job in Houston, and then that's where she met her husband. They ended up being shipped up to the Northeast, working for a NASA facility up there. And I am in Boston, and they had been seeing, hearing, and reading the articles that I was writing about Y2K, and they thought that I had lost my mind. So these are scientists, math people with no, as they say, what's the analogy I'm looking for here, Dan? You know, they had nothing to gain by jumping on the conspiratorial bandwagon about Y2K.
No benefit. No benefit.
Right. Yeah. So her husband, she couldn't be there that day. And I've never met him, but he felt it important enough to come out to my engagement and meet me. And he did. He came out, sat through my meeting, heard my lecture. And then at the end of that session, we went and grabbed a bite to eat. And he told me, looked me right in the eyes, and he said, "Listen, I'm the guy who designed the chips in those satellites. They don't care what the date is. They're not going to fall out of the sky." And he was right. We woke up. I stayed up till midnight that night.
I did too.
Television stayed on. My cell phone kept working. My computer operated just perfectly. And the next morning we arose to hear of no signs or any news reports of all of the airplanes that fell out of the sky. He was absolutely correct. So in this, and I said all of that to say, now let's go to the balloon thing. And now we have something to talk about, because if you put the politics aside and you sweep all of the conspiracy theories to the side, and you know, and it's fun to conjecture about the military aspects of this, but let's go straight to the science. And here's what we know. If you go straight to the scientists, they told us, or they're telling us, that that when the Chinese said that it was just a weather balloon that got away, that's a lie. It's too big for a weather balloon, much too large, by like five times too big for a weather balloon. Also, its capability had its to basically take that balloon far out and beyond our typical weather situations that they might want to analyze. So that's the first thing. So we know that they're lying about that. And then we also know that the most likely scenario is because of its path and the fact that it got caught in the upper stratosphere wind that of the winter trajectory of the wind currents up there that high.
Jet stream that most likely
the Chinese had lost control of the balloon. And because that particular balloon had both steering, altitude adjusting capabilities, as well as the ability to stop and hover even in a significant amount of wind, and stop and then hover over a particular target site that for better resolution photography. So what ended up happening, based on the trajectory of the way it moved in, the scientists actually believe that the Chinese not only lost their navigational control of the balloon, but they also lost their ability to terminate the balloon, which they said would have had probably at least a couple of redundancies for that termination. That's something that they would like to have blown up themselves, probably out over the Pacific before it entered into Alaska and sunk it, you know, in the deep waters out there. So the most likely scenario is that, as I said, they just lost control. their termination mechanisms failed. And as we also always know, that communists are rather loath to admit when they have a failure of that magnitude. And so the bottom line is that I hate to take everyone's tinfoil hat off.
You hate to bust a balloon.
And the other aspect of this is that had this been a mission, an actual mission, to come over here and to take photography of our, our most secret installations up in Montana and elsewhere above our nuclear missile silos or whatever the case may be, is that that mission would have been better served in the summer, because they have much less ability to control that in those winter winds.
Yeah.
And then also in the summer, they could take it up higher because of temperature aspects. They would be able to take it up higher outside of the naked eye ability of some guy looking out his office window in Billings, Montana, and running out and grabbing his camera out of the back of his car and taking a picture. Now the whole world knows about this balloon.
My thoughts are it got out of hand, and Xi Jinping, you know, he's one of Joe Biden's best friends. They shared millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm joking, yeah, of course. But let me ask you that. He's the president of the United States. You don't think he called Xi Jinping when this happened and said, hey, what the heck is going on with this? If you don't believe that conversation took place, you're an idiot. I guarantee you it did. Why, in that scenario, why would Biden not eliminate it?
Well, I just think that they knew that our own military, NORAD, well, of course, look, the fact that it even crossed into our territory and we didn't know about it ostensibly until it crossed over Billings, Montana, is laughable on its face.
Absolutely.
That's the entire purpose of NORAD.
Yes.
They know everything that's flying above our territory. And that includes all the way up into the upper atmosphere and into outer space. They know, they're tracking it all. So they did not miss this balloon. So they knew about it far in advance. Whether that conversation happened between Biden and Chairman Xi or not, the point is that at the very highest level, somebody was talking to one another, and they knew that this was an out-of-control flight. And then it was just a matter of the ineptitude being shown, the incompetence of this administration being revealed once again before they finally decided what they were going to do. And somewhere, some point in the week or so that they knew about this balloon, they determined exactly where they were going to shoot it down and how. And then Biden would go out, of course, and do a victory lap gave the order, took it down, blah blah blah. But I don't think that they had any real concerns about this balloon from early on. They not only would have known of its presence, but they would have known that it would had already lost operational control, or that the Chinese had lost operational control.
Great thoughts, absolutely great thoughts. Mine, I learned a long time ago in business. I learned when somebody is screaming, jumping up and down about something, and they're trying to make it be a big deal, the truth is probably going on in their other hand they have behind their back. So when this came up in the last few days, the first thing I started doing was I went to the ground. I want to find out what the heck is going on around us that they're up there waving and screaming about this freaking balloon instead of paying attention to whatever serious is going on. I got to be honest with you. There's a bunch of stuff happening in D.C. right now that none of us are hearing about or seeing. I know that for a fact. And it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. And they know it's going to leak out because that's what happens in D.C. And before the American people see it or hear about it, they want to have something in place to be able to counter whatever comes up. It's just not an accident. Biden's doing a State of the Union address tonight. I'm sure, as you said, he'll be all jazzed up and They'll do everything they can to keep him on the teleprompter and not say anything outside of it. But that's not the big things that are going on. I think we don't know yet what that big thing is that they're screaming and hollering to cover up. Buddy, listen, be careful up there. I mean, be smart.
I will.
Be smart, Steve. Think everything. You're a thinker anyway. Think everything through before you make a movement, because you know what? You're on the radar screen. We all know that. And they haven't started firing at you yet, but at the flip of a coin, they could do just that. And I don't want you to disappear. I don't want you to get suicided either.
Yeah, well, that's right. Let's get the memes ready, you know.
Yeah.
Steve Baker did not suicide himself.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thank you so much for being here with us. And if you get any hard concrete stuff before next Tuesday, please give me a call and we can talk about it offline.
I will do. Hey, thanks, Dan.
Have a great one. Steve Baker, our journalist of investigation. We own him. He's got great perspective. Isn't it strange that if you're on the ground when stuff is happening somewhere, you're there, you see it, you watch it, you get a clearer picture than we do when it shows up on the news a couple of days later? Think about that.
Speaking the truth, the left doesn't want you to hear. TNN, the Truth News Network.